I'm Marty Moscowen. Welcome to Radio Times. Last week began with the testimony of fired Acting Attorney General Sally Yates about National Security Advisor Michael Flynn's Russian contacts and President Trump firing FBI Director James Comey. It ended the week with the president tweeting that, quote, Comey better hope there are no tapes of our conversation before he starts leaking to the press. This was after reports of Comey contradicting the president's version of their dinner together, who claimed the FBI director told him he was not under investigation about his ties to his campaign's alleged collusion with Russia. Well, then yesterday, the Washington Post, the New York Times, and other news outlets reported that President Trump revealed highly classified information with the Russian foreign minister and ambassador last week. Now, this was the day after Comey's firing and at a White House meeting in the Oval Office where the U.S. press was excluded. Critics say this hurts the country's relationship with allies and intelligence gathering. The president tweeted that he shared the information for humanitarian reasons and for Russia to, quote, greatly step up their fight against ISIS and terrorism. Well, we asked Howard Fineman to join us in this hour of Radio Times, Global Editorial Director for the Huffington Post. Howard Fineman, nice to have you back with us on Radio Times.
It's great to be with you. What a week.
What a week. In fact, I thought our show was going to be completely different today until that last night around 5 o'clock. But nonetheless, we have a lot to talk about. Let me get Shane Harrison on the conversation, senior writer for The Wall Street Journal, where he covers intelligence, national security, and cybersecurity, joining us from the NPR Bureau, or studios, I should say, in Washington, D.C. And Shane Harris, nice to have you with us on Radio Times as well.
Hi, thanks for having me.
You're welcome, Shane. Let me begin with you and even begin with the article that you had this morning. What do we know about what exactly was shared with the Russians last week?
What we know so far is that the president had a conversation in the Oval Office with Sergei Lavrov, the Russian foreign minister, and Sergei Kislyak, the Russian ambassador to the United States. And the question of threats to aviation security, to bombs on airplanes, essentially, came up. And the president appeared to boast, I think might be the right word, that he was getting really excellent intelligence about threats of this particular nature. It's our understanding that he made reference to a particular city where this was coming out of, presumably in ISIS-controlled territory. When this meeting was then written up, as these meetings often are, it's our understanding that National Security Council officials saw this and realized that the president had actually referred to something at the highest levels of classification. And in fact, we're told information that is so classified that it's not actually being shared at that granular kind of level with our closest allies in Great Britain, Canada, and elsewhere in the so-called Five Eyes conglomerate. So there was a notice that went out from the White House saying, look, to the intelligence agencies, the president mentioned this. This happened in the meeting. And then from there, it appears that that fact became more widely known and led to the reports that we saw last night. Importantly, the White House is saying that the president did not reveal sources and methods of intelligence. In other words, he didn't say, this is coming to us from X person or from X technical collection platform, which would have been far more damaging, perhaps. But nevertheless, very significant because this information was not generated by United States intelligence. It was generated by another country that we are a very close partner with and that was shared with us in confidence and certainly in the view of officials that we talked to last night, not meant to be even mentioned in passing to certainly to senior level Russian officials.
Well, let me play National Security Advisor H.R. McMaster. He spoke to reporters last night shortly after this story came out.
The story that came out tonight, as reported, is false. The president and the foreign minister reviewed a range of common threats to our two countries, including threats to civil aviation. At no time, were intelligence sources or methods discussed. And the president did not disclose any military operations that were not already publicly known. Two other senior officials who were present, including the Secretary of State, remember the meeting the same way and have said so. Their on-the-record accounts should outweigh those of anonymous sources. And I was in the room. It didn't happen.
Howard Fineman, what do you make of what H.R. McMaster said last night?
Well, I think, and Shane may or may not agree, but I think it's very carefully worded to say that the president did not reveal a specific source, wherever this location was, did not reveal the methods by which the information was obtained. But the significance for reverse engineering of intelligence is to get whatever you can and pull the thread. If the Russians were told where the location was that this information came from, and indeed what the information was, then that's a huge gift to Russian intelligence that was not supposed to have been made. And so McMaster can be forceful in tone, but actually his words leave a lot of room for a lot of unfortunate things that perhaps the president, in fact, did.
Shane, I'm looking at something from the Associated Press. Russian Foreign Minister spokeswoman denies reports that Trump revealed classified information to senior officials. Now, of course, there were no American press in the room. How should we respond to this story and then the various responses to it?
Well, that tweet for that message from Russia is very curious, since the president himself, in two tweets this morning, appeared to acknowledge that he did, in fact, share classified information, and he said he had the absolute right, his words, to do it. I mean, I agree with what Howard said about H.R. McMaster's comments. They strike me as Jesuitical. They may be literally true.
Jesuitical. Okay, that's a new word for us.
Yeah, they may be literally true in what he said, but as Howard pointed out, there's a lot of wiggle room in there. You know, one person I talked to just this morning about the fallout from this had a very interesting point, who said, look, there's a possibility that the damage the president may have caused in talking about this information is not exceptionally grave. The issue for people around him and in the intelligence community is this casual nature that the president has with dealing with classified information. We saw this expressed in, you know, comments from people in the intelligence community even during the campaign, that if Donald Trump were to be president, would he not fully appreciate the responsibility that he has to protect and safeguard sensitive information, particularly from allies? I reported back in February in the journal that there were instances in which intelligence officials, in particular briefings, were actually withholding some sensitive sources and methods information. What I think this speaks to for a lot of people is just this kind of almost careless, and many people might say reckless, approach to national secrets that Donald Trump appears to have. And you see in his response to it today saying, well, it's my absolute right to talk about these things. That doesn't mean he should.
And Howard, he is correct about that. He's also, it's absolute right to fire the FBI director, but is it the right thing to do?
Well, I would say probably not when most of the, he's already got a huge fight going on with the intelligence community as a whole, as Sean indicated. They don't trust him, not only because they think he's reckless and uneducated in all of this, but because he has an affinity for the Russians. Let's not forget who this information was given to. It was given to the Russians. And in the view of the intelligence community, and that's 16 or 17 agencies or parts of agencies across the government that deal with national security and intelligence, they view Russia as the enemy, primarily, for the most part. They were trained that way, they grew up that way, and they think there's plenty of evidence why that's still the case, that Vladimir Putin's whole aim is to destabilize the West in any way he can, kind of fight a new version of the Cold War. That's their basic worldview. And Trump seems awfully casual about it, and in fact has said so many things that indicate he, you know, wants to be buddies with the Russians, he claims for tactical reasons. But this makes the intelligence community extremely nervous, and there, I know a lot of them who deeply, deeply, deeply distrust him and think he's up to no good. Not just reckless, but intentionally doing things. I think in this case, it looked to me from the reporting like Trump was sort of trying to impress these guys, you know, Lavrov and Kislyak, with, hey, look at the great intel I got. For what purpose? Why would he feel so comfortable doing that with the Russians? I mean, that's sort of a question that I'm sure the intelligence community's looked at. Politically, obviously, it was a self-inflicted wound. He's already under investigation, or his circle, for what may or may not have been any collusion during the campaign. He's fighting this war. He says that the so-called Russia thing was on his mind when he fired Comey. He said that to Lester Holt as part of this amazing week that he just had. Why would he then give this information to the Russians? It's nuts.
Let me turn back to you, Shane. And Politico was reporting that actually Vladimir Putin wanted or requested that the president meet with Lavrov and Kislyak, and it was the day after Comey was fired. The press, as I said, kept out of the meeting. There was a photojournalist, I should say, who took some pictures, and I have to say they look really chummy in the Oval Office in the White House.
Yeah, and I think this adds to, you know, certainly the optics for this, as we would say in Washington, were not great, and it left a lot of people scratching their heads and wondering why a day after he had fired the FBI director who was leading the Russia investigation, he would have this meeting. I mean, certainly, you know, it is the case that presidents meet with foreign officials, they meet right. with people from adversary countries. The context in which this occurred, though, that is what is so troubling to so many people, and there is no way that Donald Trump meets with a Russian official absent that context. That is always going to be there, much to the frustration of the president, who has said many times that he thinks that this whole situation is fake. That does not explain, though, why he would feel the need, and I think Howard put it well to say, you know, kind of this need to show off, maybe in front of the Russians, to share this information, even if the president believes that he has a right to meet with these people, that he should have a better relationship with Russia, that the FBI business is all fake. There's just not a universe in which it's appropriate to share information like this from a partner country. That's very important. The U.S. depends on these other nations to get information that the president clearly is concerned about threats to aviation. This is stuff I'm told we are not even sharing with our closest partners. It just makes no sense that he would even hint at it in a meeting with these Russians.
Let me play. This goes back to the campaign, but this is candidate Trump on the campaign trail discussing Hillary Clinton's private email server.
We can't have someone in the Oval Office who doesn't understand the meaning of the word confidential or classified.
Now, Howard, does he get a pass because that's a campaign and now he's president?
No, not really. I mean, again, now we're in the realm of politics here. I think that the various hypocrisies and contradictions of the campaign bleeding over into the presidency, that's always an issue. I think with Trump, it's even more of one, but that in and of itself is not going to make the Republicans run away from him. The key here politically now is what Republicans do. The Democrats are dead set against everything that Trump is doing on this front. The intelligence community, I keep saying, even though Trump has put his people in at CIA and elsewhere, the vast rank and file of the so-called community, I think, is in mortal fear of Trump. But Trump's going to survive unless the Republicans decide otherwise. And so far, for the most part, they're sticking with him. He's making it extremely difficult, I must say. I mean, if you're Mitch McConnell, the Republican leader in the Senate, how do you get out there and defend what Trump did? And McConnell has been conspicuously silent, at least as of this morning.
That's Howard Fineman, Global Editorial Director for the Huffington Post, also with us Shane Harris, Senior Writer for the Wall Street Journal, where he covers intelligence, national security, and cybersecurity. And speaking of Republicans, we have Republican consultant John Brabender waiting in the wings. Join our conversation, send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org, and tweet us at WHYY Radio Times. We'll be right back. This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moscoen. I've been talking with Shane Harris and Howard Fineman about the report yesterday that President Trump revealed highly classified information with Russian Foreign Minister Lavrov, Russian Ambassador Kislyak when they met at the Oval Office last week. And of course, a week ago from today, the president did fire FBI Director James Comey. Joining us now is John Brabender. He's a Republican consultant with Brabender Cox, who has worked with many Republicans, including Mike Pence, during his run for governor of Indiana. John Brabender across the state out there in Pittsburgh, and nice to have you back with us on Radio Times.
Glad to be here.
Is the president hurting or helping your party?
Well, I would say that the process and the communications plan is not helpful, and it's contributing to problems. But there are a couple interesting things going on. One is, contrary to belief, the president's numbers really are pretty darn stable. I went back and looked, and basically his polling numbers haven't changed at all since the information yesterday, as well as the FBI, the firing of Comey. So for them to believe that he's in this free fall is not really active. The second thing is I went back and looked at a lot of recent data talking to just Republicans, and there does not seem to be any buyer remorse. And Pennsylvania is a good example. Among Republicans, a recent survey I saw had the president's approval rating at roughly 80%. And so what we're finding is, even though he's constantly under fire, there's some questions about, is it really resonating? Yeah, there was a study out yesterday also that showed that the Comey firing was very low on social engagement of people really talking about it. What I do worry is that there is good information on the economy. There's good information on us showing some resolve and strength in dealing with places like Syria that are being overshadowed by these constant communications missteps. We're focusing too much when we shouldn't be.
Well, but don't you think the president bears some responsibility for this? It seems like a lot of this has to do with self-inflicted wounds, the things that he treats. There was a story yesterday in the New York Times, members of Congress really breaking with the president because they want to pass legislation. They see him as an impediment. Mitch McConnell this morning said, I read the Washington Post story. I read read General McMaster's responses, which tends to refute the story, rebut the story. I think we could do with a little less drama from the White House on a lot of things so we can focus on our agenda, which is deregulation, tax reform, repealing and replacing Obamacare. I want to get our other guests to weigh in, but to you, John Brabender, it seems that that the president is creating problems for his own party.
Well, look, the paradox of Donald Trump surfaced first as a candidate. Things that prevented him from being universally accepted is what ultimately helped him get elected by some who saw that his tone, his rhetoric, and even his mistakes showed him to be authentic and not the same type of person that gets served in front of them all the time. And so they really have this belief that Donald Trump's going to go shake things up and change Washington and not become this Washington insider. But the problem with that is it also creates drama, it creates controversy, and sometimes it even creates crisis. The other problem that he has is people are willing to buy a narrative now very quickly on things that they shouldn't. And yesterday was a perfect example. Here you had three people at the meeting who said that the Washington Post story was wrong, yet we're listening to people who weren't at the meetings. Number two is, as much as we think of Russia as an adversary these days, when it does come to fighting ISIS, they probably are much more of an ally. And the only thing that was discussed of any sense of the basis, from what I understand at least, was about the fight against ISIS. And so, you know, and then third of all, I would even argue that, you know, what the president did yesterday was probably no better or worse than when President Obama was caught on tape secretly saying, after the election, I'm going to be more flexible on negotiating with you, the Russians, on missile defense. You know, I think that you could argue that that was equally even more unacceptable. But the problem is,
but he wasn't revealing intelligence secrets, as certainly has been reported. John, hold on one second, because I do want to get both of our guests to give them a chance to respond to your comments. Howard, what do you make of what John Brabender just said?
Well, what I make of it is John Brabender, who I as a fellow Pittsburgher, I know and trust and like very much, is making a very spirited defense here. Which indicates to me that the line is holding for Donald Trump with Republicans. As John pointed out these numbers and as he's reciting these points here, I think what John is saying, and I think he's probably right, is that the Republicans, while they're uncomfortable, and as McConnell said, he wished there'd be a little less drama from the White House, that doesn't mean they're going to abandon him. And as long as that's the case, Trump, people are going to yell and scream, justifiably, in my view, but that's not going to fundamentally change this sort of in the trenches World War I style war that's going on here in Washington.
Shane, you want to weigh in on that?
No, I think that's right. I mean, I think that Donald Trump's fate, to a large extent, is in the hands of Republicans in Congress at this point, and they're not abandoning him. But what you hear in their on the record and their off the record comments is this growing anxiety about a White House that can't get its act together. I mean, Bob Corker said this yesterday, saying this is a White House that appears to be in a downward spiral. I found that to be a really arresting statement from a top Republican in the Congress. I think that I don't know how much this is resonating resonating with the American public. But if Donald Trump is ultimately seen as somebody who is not getting things done for his base and is, you know, incompetent or bumbling in the basics that we expect from a commander-in-chief, I can't imagine that won't have some political consequence for him and possibly for the Republicans in the midterms, which is going to be
a really strong indicator. And I would ask John if he thinks that it's a long way out to the midterm elections, but he's not going to argue that this is helping Republicans in the midterms, is he?
And especially in Pennsylvania.
No, go ahead, John. But
here's
interesting. I was listening to somebody from Real Clear Politics who said they started to model out, based upon where the president's numbers are today, that they would project that the Republicans would actually probably pick up a seat or two in the Senate. But that what worries me somewhat, though, is two things. One is the numbers should start getting better, and they don't seem to be getting better. And I'm the first to say they are dysfunctional on the communication side, and everybody has there's enough blame to go around with everybody over there for that, and they've got to fix it, and they've got to fix it now. That's number one. Number two, where it's going to hurt in the midterms at this point is not necessarily the existing candidates. It's the recruitment of new candidates in states where they should do well. Senate races in Indiana and Michigan and Ohio and Pennsylvania. There's a lot of good candidates that are saying, look, I'm going to wait even longer now because I see the fluidity of everything going on. And that does not work to the Republicans' benefits. They need candidates that are good candidates, committed now to getting into the race, starting to raise money, getting a message out there. So to me, this is not a incompetent president. This is a dysfunctional system that's making the president at times look incompetent. And that's where I think they've got to fix it.
But doesn't that tell us, John, that either he doesn't understand how the system works or perhaps he doesn't care? I toggle back and forth between those two things.
I would argue, and I see this a lot in a lot of different industries. Somebody is very successful in one industry and they come and they think they're going to do the same thing, and what they realize, it takes a while for them to realize is what they don't know. They think they know it, but they don't know it. And I would argue that the president would be better served if, indeed, he would not just think of how his standard operating procedure is and understand that, for example, you have to have a narrative, and you have to constantly be talking that narrative and sharing with the American people why you're doing. The whole Muslim ban that they rushed out literally in the middle of the night without maybe even doing a sit down with the American people saying, here's what I'm doing and why, was a disaster. And I see that time and time again, that we don't have room for arrogance or hubris right now. What we do have time for, though, is to have a conversation with the American people about what we're doing, why we're doing it, and what the net result's going to be. I don't see that happen. They're spending too much time on action, 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 and not enough time on sharing information with the American people.
Well, John,
Trump doesn't want strong people around him who have independent knowledge and standing. He wants people around him who he can get rid of at any time. So it's part of the lack of proper decision making is not just communication. It's the fact that he has people around him who either don't know what to tell him to do that's correct, or don't have the guts to tell him.
Fair enough. John Brabender, I appreciate you joining us today on Radio Times.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Republican consultant with Brabender Cox, headquartered across the state over there in Pittsburgh. Howard Fineman staying with us for the rest of the hour, global editorial director for the Huffington Post, and Shane Harris, senior writer for the Wall Street Journal, where he covers intelligence, national security, and cybersecurity. And you can join our conversation. That phone number, where am I? The phone number, it's also a comment line, 267-405-2006. Some old habits die hard. You can also send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org, and you can tweet us at WHYY Radio Times. Shane, let me go back to you. So, I thought we were going to be talking about Comey today and what happened last week, but clearly there are other and equally important things to talk about. Where do the investigations, especially within the FBI, where does that stand today?
Well, the FBI investigation, which is a counterintelligence investigation into Trump associates and their potential ties to the Russians and whether there was active collusion between the Trump campaign and Russians who were meddling in the election. That is a pretty – well, it's clearly not finished, but it's further ahead than investigations in Congress, which I'll mention in a second. But
Sure. Essentially
where the Bureau is at right now, as we understand it, is in trying to piece together whether or not there was any of this collusion. We know that they're looking at least four Trump associates, including Mike Flynn, the fired national security advisor, and Paul Manafort, who was the campaign chairman for a period of time for Trump. There have been grand jury subpoenas issued related to Michael Flynn, the former national security advisor, which is at least some indication that there may be activity in the investigation that is now producing something in the way of a potential indictment. It's not entirely clear whether that grand jury proceeding is connected to Trump's, or sorry, to the Russia ties, because Mike Flynn has some other issues with lobbying that he failed to disclose and some work that he was doing and money he was taking from Russia. On the congressional side, you've got the Senate and the House Intelligence Committees doing their own investigations, trying to answer many of the same questions that the FBI is asking as well. The Senate is much further along, I think, than the House, which got derailed after its chairman, Devin Nunes, went over to the White House and tried to claim that there was information that he said he wasn't getting from the White House about leaks and an unmasking of intelligence officials. It turned out that he was. The Senate right now, our understanding is they've already subpoenaed Mike Flynn as well. They're demanding documents from some of the same people under investigation by the FBI. And importantly, what they've been doing is going through intelligence reporting that helped comprise last year this assessment by the intelligence community that the Russians meddled in the elections. They're going through that, trying to piece things together as well, and now are going to get access to data from the Treasury Department, which will help them sort of piece together any money trails that there might exist between Trump's orbit and Russia. So it's a fairly expansive investigation as well.
Does that mean it will be months, maybe more than a year, before any kind of results are in or findings?
I think certainly on the congressional side, you're looking at probably 18 to 24 months to finish it. They only have 9 investigators, I think, at last count that were working on this. Jim Comey had requested on his side for the FBI more resources, and we understand that to be more manpower to help with the investigation for the FBI, which signals that it may be getting not necessarily to a terminal point, but really picking up steam. He was then fired the day after he made that request, so it's not clear whether they're going to get that. But we do know that Comey was getting daily updates instead of his regular weekly check-ins on the Russia investigation, which is a clear signal that the investigation is accelerating. How close that means that, you know, the train is to the station, I think that's hard to tell, but we're talking months here.
Howard, let me go back to you, picking up something you said to John Brabander, but also you had a big piece in the Huffington Post. There are several things in there I would like to talk to you about. One is the kind of parallels that you see to how Trump ran his business and how you see him running his administration.
Well, before I get to that, if you don't mind,
no.
I think the investigation, the subpoenas from the grand jury are crucial here in my view. And I'm not on the beat full time, and Shane would know a lot more than I. But having covered a lot of investigations over the years, both politically and to some extent legally, I think what's going on here, at least my pretty substantiated surmise, is that the subpoenas for stuff related to Flynn and his associates on their business dealings and so forth is part of a larger effort to get information that they can use to put pressure on people like Mike Flynn or Paul Manafort or others. It's correct that this is a counterintelligence investigation, which has more to do with national security than traditional crimes on the code book. But if you can find evidence of crimes that are of a more traditional nature, those can be useful in a national security investigation, quite obviously. And I think the place to look is over there in the Eastern District of Virginia and see what's going on there, because that's a key to what the potential is to put pressure on the people around Donald Trump. And I think, as I said in that piece that you referred to,
right,
I think one of the things that Trump is worried about is he doesn't know precisely what these other people know. He doesn't know precisely what those other people did. And by other people, I mean people like Mike Flynn and Paul Manafort, et cetera. Donald Trump likes to bully people. He likes to be able to crush them if he needs to, ignore them if he has to. But if you're in a situation where somebody's in the clutches of a U.S. attorney, and or the FBI, you don't know, if you don't know everything that those people know, you're vulnerable. And I think that's the situation, if you dig down deep, that Donald Trump is in right now, or that he's worried about. So that's number one.
Sure.
One of the points that I made in my piece was, I think when Donald Trump was in business, he had, and he does have, I think, his superpower, if you will, is to sense the weakness of others, to sense the weakness of institutions. And I think I said in the piece, kick in rotted doors. I think he did that with the Republican Party. I think he did that with Hillary Clinton. I think he's trying to do it with the press. I think he's tried to do it with the agencies around him. And it's true that the intelligence community is not exactly beloved in America at this point. They were caught spying on Americans. They missed, one might argue, they missed both 9/11 and the Iraq War, et cetera, et cetera. And he's going after them. He's in a war with those people. And in the past, that's a war that presidents, even presidents, would lose. Richard Nixon, some would argue, lost it because of that. After all, Deep Throat was in the FBI. But Trump is taking them on. Trump thinks, my view is, and I've covered him for a long time and know him some, he thinks he can muscle through this. And that's what the real conflict is here. And as Shane said, it's going to go on for a long time.
Well, let's take another break and then we'll get back to our conversation. I see lots of people that want to join it. Talking with Howard Feynman, Global Editorial Director for The Huffington Post, and Shane Harris, Senior Writer for The Wall Street Journal, talking about a number of different things, including the firing of FBI Director James Comey, certainly the relationship with the intelligence community, the news of yesterday that the president reportedly revealed highly classified information with the Russian foreign minister and the Russian ambassador to the U.S. And again, you can join our conversation. You can call or text our comment line, 267-405-2006. You can send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org, and tweet us at WHYY Radio Times. We have more clips after the break. We'll be right back. This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. Let me play Republican Senator Richard Burr of North Carolina. He said of the Senate Foreign Relations Committee, and this was him speaking with reporters last week.
The timing and the reasoning incites people to believe that there's something that's being covered up. I said in my statement that this director of the Federal Bureau of Investigation has been more open with me and my committee than any person over the 23 years that I've been here who's served in that capacity. I'm sure I will get the same level of cooperation from the acting and from the next permanent. It's my hope. But an interruption in any of the access we have to documents and to personnel would be harmful to our investigation.
Shane, what's the mood inside the FBI, as you can determine?
Well, I think that the rank and file of the FBI, despite what President Trump and White House officials said after Trump fired him, is actually quite supportive of Comey. He was a politically controversial and even divisive figure. There's no doubt about that. I think he knows that full well. But this is somebody who did have, I think, the trust and respect of a lot of rank and file agents. I think that people I've certainly talked to in the intelligence and law enforcement community believe that if Trump can remove the FBI director under what is, I mean, it's not even a false pretense anymore, but the business of Hillary Clinton's email, the president himself made clear in his interview with Lester Holt that he had it in mind to do this and indicated that it was at least in part because he was annoyed by the Russia investigation. There's a real sense among these career national security folks that if the president can do that, he will feel emboldened to do anything, even something even more significant. So you're going to see a lot of rallying around both Comey, but also these institutions of the FBI and the intelligence agencies that are there regardless of who's president and will be there when Donald Trump is no longer president.
But do you see them saying, well, we're going to ramp up our investigation because the president sort of belittled the person who was heading the investigation?
No, I don't think that they'll react in that way and say, well, you did this, therefore we're going to go even harder on you. I do think there's a real question about what happens to the FBI investigation now that the director has been removed and there is this sort of tumult at the top. Now, what the real question there becomes, who does the president appoint to replace Jim Comey? Mm-hmm. If it's someone who is apolitical, who has law enforcement experience, as a lot of career law enforcement people are urging right now, then I think that will help settle some nerves and calm some nerves at the Bureau. If that person is seen as a political loyalist to the president, that's going to upset a lot of people and could potentially jeopardize the investigation or at least the credibility of it if it's not seen as being fair and separate from politics.
Howard, let me go back to you and I'll quote something from your article. You say, so how does Trump try to win this war? And this was the war about some of the various allegations against him and his campaign. How does Trump try to win this war and shut down or sidetrack the investigations now underway in the Senate, House, and FBI? Can he shut down and sidetrack those investigations?
Well, my take on it is that he thinks he can. I doubt it, but I think he's going to try, and I think he's going to pressure as many people as he thinks he can get away with. The problem he's got in the Senate is that if he proposes a pliant figure or somebody that he thinks he can count on, who seems to be too political and not purer than the driven snow, then you have some people on the Republican side, perhaps, I'm just guessing here, like Susan Collins of Maine. Bob Corker's been talking big about his concerns. Some other possible Republican moderates, Richard Burr, maybe, who knows, who may not go along. But Trump has put the Democrats and put his opponents in a tough position here in a way. Because if the Democrats follow through on their pledge to oppose whoever the FBI nominee is, unless there's an agreement to appoint a special prosecutor, to some extent it plays into Donald Trump's hands if there's a never-ending fight over who the next FBI director is.
Hmm.
He would like to have instability and inconstancy within the FBI. Paradoxically, the Democrats need to find somebody they can agree on for the FBI director because they want the investigation to continue. Trump would just as soon have it be constant chaos at the top of the FBI. So that's a kind of tough position for those who are looking to control him to be in.
Let me add another clip from another Republican, and this has to do with the allegations of taping that the president might have taped or seemed to tweet about taping Comey when they had their dinner meeting. This is Republican Senator Lindsey Graham of South Carolina speaking on NBC's Chuck Todd Sunday on Meet the Press.
And if there are any tapes, they have to be turned over. You can't be cute about tapes. If there are any tapes of this conversation, they need to be turned over. I doubt if there are, but we need to clear there.
Shane, do we know if they're tapes or not?
Oh, we don't know. And the White House has refused to say whether there are or there are not. I think there's an assumption that there are not. But then the question is, why did the president seem to indicate this? And was he just being cute and trying to draw a reference to Watergate, which seems politically not the wisest thing to do at the moment? But what he has done is now created sort of a grappling point that Democrats and Republicans can grab onto and say, hold on a second here. If you've got material that is pertinent to this matter, you're going to have to turn it over. I mean, he's setting himself up for a fight there. If there are no tapes, it's very interesting that the White House press secretary denied or declined multiple invitations by the press to say there are none. So it seems to me the president at least wants us to believe that there are tapes.
But at some point, Howard, he's going to have to put up or shut up, right?
Well, I think Sean Spicer said what he said because Sean Spicer doesn't know, because Trump hasn't told him. I think Donald Trump is at the point where he's not sure whom to trust within his inner circle, even though he's tried to get people who have no choice but to be loyal to him. My gut instinct is that there are none, but I don't know. He's been known to have done some taping in his business office and his business practice in the past. Who the heck knows? Hmm. I don't know. But again, he's doing everything he can here to sow confusion and division. One would think that it's at his own expense, but Donald Trump thrives on chaos, and I think he thinks that this is how somehow he's going to proceed. I mean, either he's going to get cornered or he's not, and it's going to take months for us to know.
Howard, I've seen a number of people say, and I don't know if you buy into this or not, that the president is acting like he has something to hide. Do you see it that way?
Yeah, of course. Of course. But from his point of view, that's not necessarily a bad thing, paradoxically. I mean, if this is a guy who wants to keep people perpetually uneasy about what he knows or doesn't know, what he's doing or what he isn't doing. He considers himself a master of indirection. I mean, on one level, by traditional standards, he's making a complete and utter hash of his presidency, such as it is. But in terms of somebody capable of brute survival, he's had a lifetime of doing it. And he could do untold and perhaps irreparable damage to many of the institutions of government that we've operated on in normal times. But these are not normal times.
I do have another clip, but let me read some comments here. We've got a lot of them. A tweet from Kenny. This interview is firming up the argument that the party has been firmly placed above the interests of the country. There is no other excuse. An email from Phil. Is it a concern the chaos surrounding Trump's presidency will make it difficult to attract the quality staff that our government needs to function well? A tweet from Jeremy. Have you seen this? From this morning, Trump admits he shared classified information, but he has the right to do that. And we kind of touched on that earlier. An email from Stu, the GOP will not abandon Trump because he will sign anything they put in front of him. His antics deflect attention away from what they want to do, less taxes on the rich, kill regulations. Let me play a call of someone who called into our call or comment line. Let's give that a listen.
Hi, this is Jeff from Hocasin, Delaware. I would not believe anything that comes out of CNN, NPR, the Washington Post, only because I listened and watched these guys turn a blind eye to everything that President Obama had done and Hillary Clinton. It's just amazing. And everybody that voted for Donald Trump is with him because they know about the corruptness of the media. These are left-wing. And that's all I got to say.
I mean, Howard, that's clearly, I mean, as he says, this is how Trump supporters believe, which is no one said anything critical of President Obama and Hillary Clinton. And they're 100% behind Donald Trump. This is not the first time someone's called into the show to say the exact same thing.
Well, I think there's just enough truth to that to help Donald Trump preserve his coalition, perhaps not forever, but certainly for the time being. I think there was plenty of tough coverage of Barack Obama. I was at Newsweek when he came in, and I've been at the Huffington Post since, and there were plenty of times when both were extremely tough on the former president, and I think we did a lot of very good reporting on it. But Donald Trump is a different kind of character, and he's invited a lot of the tough coverage that he's gotten, and I would say that he's willingly and eagerly invited it in many cases, because his whole theory is one of combat, and his whole theory is one that he understands the weakness of various opponents. And right now, I mean, that caller's right. We just have a new poll in the Huffington Post this morning. People don't believe the press any more than they believe Donald Trump, right, according to our poll.
Well, there you go. Let me play one more clip. This is former Director of National Intelligence, James Clapper. He was speaking on Sunday to CNN's Jake Tapper on State of the Union.
I think in many ways our institutions are under assault, both externally, and that's the big news here, is the Russian interference in our election system. And I think as well our institutions are under assault internally.
Internally from the president?
Exactly.
I mean, Shane, is this whole thing a test of our democratic institutions, whether it's Congress, whether it's the intelligence community, whether it's the press?
I believe that it is. And I think that Director Clapper, you know, who spent four decades of his life working in intelligence, really succinctly expresses what many people in the intelligence community feel. I think, you know, the question of, you know, as the caller put his finger on it, that we in the press have these incredibly low credibility ratings right now. And Donald Trump knows that. And I think bouncing off Director Clapper's point, the president's strategy here, rather than trying to restore the credibility of institutions, is to use vulnerable institutions to try to strengthen himself. So he is attacking the media and creating a narrative of unfairness and bias about him that will play very, very strongly and resonate very clearly with his base. I do not believe that does anything to restore the broader problem that we have, not just in his base, but outside it too, with lack of faith in institutions. We're not used to seeing presidents come in and purposely, deliberately, repeatedly choose this kind of exploitative, divisive strategy. They tend to try to more be bridge builders and people who are trying to build a coalition. That is not who Trump is. To what Howard has said so many times very clearly, he is a fighter, and he is going to fight, and he is going to use us in the press and the intelligence community, these institutions, players in this combat that he thinks is going to serve his interests.
And the goal for the president, Shane, as you see it, is winning, whatever winning means to him?
Right, whatever winning means to him. I think, brute survival, as Howard put it, is a good way of seeing it. I don't know if that is a wise electoral strategy, but he was elected president, so what do I know?
What do we all know? But Howard, let me pick up on that and
what
go
do
back.
I know?
Yeah, well, exactly. I think we're all in the same boat here. But
right.
But by going after institutions, does he end up, in a sense, inoculating himself? Let's say the FBI or even some of these congressional committees come up with damning information. Does that then inoculate him so that he stays strong with his supporters?
Well, that's what he's trying to do. I mean, anybody who is an opponent, say, in the Republican primary race, there was Lion Ted, there was Little Mario, et cetera. Hillary Clinton was, the criminal, et cetera. He tries to devalue and debunk and undermine the validity of any person or institution that seeks to limit him or control him or call him to account. That's how he operates. And the fact that he's trying to do that to the intelligence community is really something. And, of course, to the Congress and in the press. But that's how he operates. That's how he operates. And I think the most important people in this equation are Republicans, Republican leaders, Republican voters. The Trump constituency is going to remain. And I think these leaders on the Hill, to take, again, Mitch McConnell as an example, they've got at some point, depending on how things go, they've got to decide where they stand. And they're going to postpone that moment as long as they possibly can.
Well, to be continued. Howard Fineman, thank you for joining us today in Radio Times.
Thank you. I'm delighted. Anytime.
Okay. He's a global editorial director for the Huffington Post, wrote a book called The 13 Arguments. Shane Harris, thank you for joining us as well.
It was my pleasure. Thank you.
You're very welcome. Joining us from the NPR studios in Washington, D.C., senior writer for The Wall Street Journal covering intelligence, national security, and cybersecurity. We also checked in with Republican consultant John Brabender. Go to whyy.org/radiotimes, and you can find out much more about the program. You can tell us what you think of the show. We are always interested. Al Banks, the engineer for today's edition of Radio Times, the show produced by Debbie Builder, John Ahrens, and Trinae Nuri. I'm Marty Moscowen. Thank you so much for joining us.